By being one of the few women, you can really invest in the blind spots that are left by our colleagues and invest in some of the best businesses that are catering to an economy that we know as women that is fast growing. I really saw that gap in the market, and I saw it as really an arbitrage opportunity where if you're able to invest where there is limited competition, you're able to really cherry pick the best investments that can typically yield to enhanced return. Our gender lens is actually two-pronged. It's investing in businesses that are either founded, co-founded by women or have gender diverse teams, or businesses that provide essential goods and services for women.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Merchants. Our guest today is Adesua Okombo-Rhodes. Adesua is a managing partner and founder of Arua Capital Management, an early stage growth equity and gender lens fund. As one of the few female partners in Africa, Adesua is passionate about getting more women to start their own companies and fund startups. In this episode, we discussed our reasons for starting the Gender Lens Fund, benefits of investing in women, and when startups should raise money. But first, a message from our sponsor, the TechPoint Africa business team.
Hi, I'm Abisola Adenuga, the head of business at TechPoint Africa. Are you an early stage startup looking for brand awareness for your organization? In search of potential investors and product engagement, leverage TechPoint Africa's extensive network of startups, tech enthusiasts, investors, and executives on the African continent and beyond to elevate your brand and business. For inquiries, please send us an email to business@techpoint.africa or click on the link in the description. Together, let's take your business to the next level.
Good morning, Adesua, and welcome to the show. So, first, can you just introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Thank you for having me here. My name is Adesua Okombo-Rhodes. I'm the founder of Arua Capital Management. We are an early stage growth equity and gender lens fund investing in Nigeria and Ghana. We are investing from a $20 million fund and invest in businesses that are in the essential goods and services sector that are enabled by tech in some way. So health tech, fintech, clean tech, and also essential consumer goods. We have made six investments to date, and we also invest with a gender lens. So Arua Capital is one of the few early stage growth equity funds owned and run by a woman. So we believe that being one of the few women allocating capital on the continent from their own fund, we have a very strong natural competitive advantage to invest with a gender lens into businesses that are either founded, led, or co-founded by women, or businesses that provide essential goods and services to women. We see that as a huge arbitrage opportunity. One that will enable us to enhance returns for our investors because we are in an industry, a private equity and VC industry that is still dominated by mostly men allocating capital. So by being one of the few women, we can really invest in the blind spots that are left by our colleagues and invest in some of the best businesses that are catering to an economy that we know as women that is fast growing. So that's really us in a nutshell. We are very excited to be showcasing untapped and overlooked opportunities on the continent. And our portfolio to date is really showcasing that we don't have to sacrifice returns for social impact. So that's us in a nutshell.
Okay, so you mentioned that you invest through a gender lens. So why did you choose to invest in women, or why does that inform your fund thesis?
Yeah, so I think one misconception is people hear gender lens and they think that we only invest in women, but our gender lens is actually two-pronged. It's investing in businesses that are either founded, co-founded by women or have gender diverse teams, or businesses that provide essential goods and services for women. So why do we invest with a gender lens? Well, I think for myself, you know, I've been in the industry now for the last 14 years. I was running a fund prior to launching Arua, And when I was fundraising for that previous fund, I looked around and saw that there were no women running or owning their own funds. Back then, this was kind of 2018, there were less than 10 funds in the whole of Africa that were owned and run by a woman. And this is a continent of 1.3 billion people, 54 different countries. That just didn't seem very right to me when women make up 50% of the population. And Africa has the highest rate of female entrepreneurship in the world. So I really saw that gap in the market, and I saw it as really a arbitrage opportunity where if you're able to invest where there is limited competition, you're able to really cherry pick the best investments that can typically yield to enhanced return. So that was kind of the first thesis, is let's invest in this gap because we have a natural competitive advantage as women to invest in this gap. So why do we invest with a gender lens? It's because of the limited competition. It's also because of the research that now shows that gender diversity improves profitability of companies. So Harvard Business Review, IFC, BCG, they've all brought out research that shows that gender diversity on boards, gender diversity in management teams, helps to improve profitability, helps to reduce risk. So BCG in their research have shown that for every dollar that's invested in a startup, female-founded startups are generating 2.5 times more revenue than male-founded startups. McKinsey has found that companies that have gender-diverse executive teams are typically 21% more likely to experience above-average profitability. IFC have found that gender-diverse senior investment management teams are generating 20% more return than teams that don't have gender diversity. So I think the jury is now out that if you don't have gender diversity in your portfolio, you're actually lacking in your fiduciary responsibility to your investors, because it's a detriment, it's a risk to your portfolio not to have that gender diversity. So the first reason was limited competition. The second reason is we strongly believe that by having gender diverse teams, by investing in companies that have gender diversity, it will improve the profitability of those companies, and then as a result, improve the returns of our fund. So that's the second reason. And then the third reason is, as we look at the African continent, the African woman plays such an important role in society and in her family. So as we improve the financial independence of these women, as we make them, you know, financially stable, economically strong, they're able to reinvest 90% of their income. It's been proven that women typically reinvest 90% of their income into healthcare, into education for their children, for their families. So by empowering these women, not only is it a financial return, there is also a social return where there is increase in the access of basic goods and services for children, for families, there's poverty alleviation, there's job creation, there is empowerment of local communities, just because of the role that African women play in society as well. So for us, investing with a gender lens is a no-brainer because it's financial return as well as social return and social impact. And there's a multiplier effect on our communities where we really need, private sector interventions. So if our capital is able to do that in societies and in these local communities, we're very, very excited to do that. And it's actually being seen through our portfolio right now, just the impact that we're having in terms of the jobs that we're creating for women and the multiplier effect that that has on their children and their families as well. So that's why we invest with a gender lens. We're very excited to be really pioneering the space in the early stage growth equity segment. So for transactions that are kind of less than $2 million. And yeah, we're excited to continue to showcase the untapped opportunity that has been overlooked for a number of years.
That's interesting. Your approach seems to cover everything, both impact investing and also generating like good financial returns for your investors.
Yes.
So this isn't your first time leading an investment fund. You've done that before. So can you share what your experience was? You mentioned that one of the reasons you started at Arua Capital is because you noticed there were very few female-run or female-led funds on the continent. So can you share what your experience was raising your first fund and probably Arua's fund as well? So from the perspective of a woman, how was your experience?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good question. And I think it's one that, you know, I'm able to empathize with female entrepreneurs when they approach us for funding. Because, you know, being a woman raising capital in this environment is very, very difficult. And we've seen the statistics, you know, last year, 4.5 billion or so was raised in African VC. Less than 1% went to single female founder teams. Less than 7% went to women overall. So it's a very, very difficult environment when you're a woman that's looking to raise capital. And that was my experience raising the first fund and even raising this one. You know, being a young African black woman on the road, you know, it's very, very tough. And it's very, very tough because you can't be what you can't see. And that's one of the reasons I started Arua is if I had more, you know, on my side, more LPs that looked like me, reviewing me as a potential investment opportunity, maybe it would have been quicker. So one of the reasons I started Arua is we want to be the case study. We want to be the success story by God's grace. Well, that when people look at us and see that we've been able to raise capital, we've been able to deploy successfully, then they will take the risk to better themselves because they're able to know that when they come into the room and are talking to someone that looks like them, then it wouldn't be such an alien conversation. There would be some level of understanding, there'll be some level of empathy when that conversation is being had. Because I think the trouble with the ecosystem today is we don't have enough women allocating capital. When these female entrepreneurs enter a room, they're pitching their idea to five guys. They're pitching their idea to eight guys. So until we have that representation in the people that are actually making the investment decisions and the ones that are allocating the capital, we will continue to see these disparities in terms of percentage of funding going to male versus female entrepreneurs. So for us, you know, that was, you know, one of the main reasons is if we're able to build and run a successful fund that's run and owned by African women or African women, then we hope that that will inspire more people to invest in African women full stop, but will also give the African female entrepreneurs some hope that when they enter the room, there's someone that they can identify with that's reviewing their investment opportunity. So that's, you know, that's kind of the bigger picture is we want Arua to provide hope for entrepreneurs, but also hope for others that are raising funds so that it doesn't take them as long as it took me to get the fund off the ground.
Okay. All right. That's impressive. So I'm just wondering, you mentioned the fact that not having enough people who looked like you could have probably influenced how long it took you to raise funds. So I'm just wondering, there are like micro VCs. I'm not sure they are really a thing here in Africa, but basically you just give people who are probably not yet at your level, so they just invest in their peers, people that they are very familiar with or people who can easily approach them. So is that concept something that you would consider at Arua Capital or something that other VCs can also consider?
So I think what you're describing is angel investing, right? Like friends and family rounds, right? And I think that angel investing has definitely taken, has accelerated over the last, I would say, 3 years, where you now have, you know, family and friends coming together, investing in pre-seed rounds, investing in seed rounds, just based on the fact that they have that connection with the founder and that they know and can vouch for the founder's integrity and knowledge and, you know, discipline, etc. So I think angel investing is something that in Africa we've seen boom. I'm actually part of an angel investing network called Rising Tide Africa, which is one of the few, actually one of the large female angel investing groups in Nigeria and in Africa. So yeah, I don't think that's something we can do at Arua Capital because we manage institutional money. But, you know, in my own personal capacity, I definitely try and angel invest now and again just to support, you know, entrepreneurs in their early stages.
Okay. So just to be clear, how much does Arua Capital typically invest in startups? And for what equity?
So we typically invest anywhere between 500k to 2.5 million into businesses, $2.5 million. We're typically minority investors, so that, you know, we're not looking to take more than 25% of anyone's business. And we typically invest, I would say, in kind of the post-seed, pre-series A slash series A stage, where the business has already proven their business model. They're already on a growth trajectory, already have demand for their product or service, have an existing route to market, but they just need that incremental capital to scale up. So that's where we come in. It's not yet quite private equity investing because the PE funds want to see at least, you know, $5 million in deal sizes. So we think we have quite a good missing middle between pure play VC, you know, pre-seed and seed. And also between, you know, the larger private equity transactions that are typically $5 to $10 million. So for us, over the last 6 years, we've seen a very, very clear gap in what we call the missing middle between VC and PE. And that's the middle. That's the kind of the segment that we're looking to address.
So earlier you mentioned 2021 was like a record breaking year for African startups. So what's your take on 2021 as an investor? What are some of the learnings that we should take from 2021 going into the future?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it was definitely an exciting time for African VC and African PE. I would say in the VC space, there was a bit of a bubble that was forming. You know, so as an investor looking in, you know, definitely seeing the overinflated valuations. A trend that we saw was a lot of foreign funds coming into the market. So typically US, large US tech funds coming into the market, not really having the local context, and just accepting some of these ridiculous valuations because for them, you know, their allocation to Africa is a drop in the bucket. So they can play and gamble. Unlike us that are here on the ground building, trying to build sustainable businesses. So I think that was a trend that we saw, that, you know, because of the influx of foreign capital, valuations kind of went a bit crazy. But I'm glad to see that there's now kind of a correction in the market. and, you know, founders are coming back down to earth. So I'd say that's a trend that we noticed, and I'm hoping that this will teach some of the local, you know, some of the foreign investors to partner with us on the ground to make sure that they're backing the right businesses and not just the ones that look good on paper.
Okay.
So I'd say that that's maybe a trend I noticed.
Okay. All right. So what are the sectors that, not just sectors that you invest in at Arua Capital, but like sectors that you believe are vital to the African future, basically? What sectors would you like more people to get into?
Yeah, so I think, you know, those sectors that I mentioned, you know, for us, I think essential goods and services, you know, we have a rapidly growing African population. You know, half of the population growth in the world over the next 30 years is coming from Africa. We have a rapidly urbanizing population. People are getting richer, but we also have a very, very young population as well. You know, average age of under, you know, 35 years old, majority of the population. So as I think about those dynamics and those demographics, I'm trying to position our portfolio to the goods and services that this growing segment will always need. And for me, that's healthcare. For me, that's access to payments and, you know, lending and financial services. That's access to power. You know, hundreds of millions of Africans still lack access to electricity. So is there a way that we can provide access to power that's in a clean, sustainable way through renewable energy, but also overlaying tech on that as well. And we did a very interesting investment last year that does that. And then I also think about just essential goods, essential consumer goods. So whether that's, you know, agri-tech, you know, using technology to help farmers increase their yield, improve food security, whether that's, you know, access to, you know, wellness products and superfoods. So we invested in a company that exports superfoods. So that's kind of how we think about it. It's what are the essential goods and services that, regardless of political stability, regardless of macroeconomic situation, we're able to invest in the things that this rapidly growing and mostly young population will need for the, you know, decades to come. And if we can use technology to get these goods and services to people as quickly and in a scalable way, then we are very, very interested in those type of companies.
All right. So you mentioned the oversized valuations that a lot of businesses or a lot of startups had, and that foreign investors actually used. Now, we have a situation where, because of that, a lot of people, they just start a business and then they kind of slap tech on it. And then next thing is they're looking for funding. When is a startup ready for VC investment? And on the other hand, what kind of businesses are not suitable for VC investments?
Okay, so I think that's a good question. So, so when is a startup ready for VC investment? I think you'll be ready for VC investment when there is some sort of, you know, product market fit in some way. So, yes, you have an idea, but, you know, have you been able to show that there is demand for that idea in the market? Have you been able to size your addressable market appropriately? Have you been able to show, you know, clearly what your unique value proposition is? Have you been able to get the right team in place? Because I also see a lot of kind of one-man, one-woman bands. And I think if you're going to be taking VC investment, you need to show that there is some depth in the management team. And that there is a clear, you know, delineation of roles and responsibilities. So yeah, I would say that, you know, people rush out, as you say, for VC investment so that they can appear on your press releases. but not a lot of people are always ready at that, as you say. So I think it's just taking the time to make sure that you have the right structure in place, you know, management team, product market fit, market assessment, you know, projections that make sense, you know, in terms of your numbers, that are linked back to your market and demand assessments. So I think these are some of the things that, you know, a good VC would be looking for when you're looking to you know, to that first raise.
Okay, so to the second question, is it every business that should look out for VC investment, or are there just certain businesses that are more suitable for VC?
I wouldn't say every business should apply for VC investment. You know, there are some businesses that may not need VC investment, you know, because I think for us, it's not only about the money. It's also about the institutionalization that a VC or a PE firm can bring. You know, what is the value add that they're bringing to you? Are they helping you to enhance your operations? Are they helping you to connect to other markets? Are they helping you with client acquisition? So, you know, some people, they have the right team, they can bootstrap and they can do all these things themselves, right? Not everyone needs VC, but some people will need, VC.
Some help. Yeah.
Yeah, some people may need some help and some support as they think about scaling up their business. And that's part money, but also part operational support as well. You know, who are the right, you know, engineers, developers, salespeople to be hiring? Can you, you know, tap into your network to provide some CVs, provide some names? You know, every VC brings a different thing. And it's also the founders as well, doing their own due diligence on the VCs to see, okay, what are the gaps that I have in my company? Where do I need support? So no, not every company needs VC funding. Some may have been able to build the right team where, you know, they can, you know, raise money from networks, raise money, you know, in other ways, and don't need the operational support because they've got a strong team with strong and deep networks. So it really depends on the gaps that you have in your business.
All right. So speaking of what VCs bring to the table, what would you say is Arua Capital's unique proposition to founders? Why should a founder choose just to have you as an investor?
This is an exam question. So I think, you know, what we always say is, you know, we bring more than just money. Yes, we can bring money. But I think being a local investor with deep networks on the ground, we can also help with some of those things I mentioned in terms of operational support. So with a lot of our founders, you know, we carry their matter on our head. we make sure we make the right introductions for client acquisitions. If there are anything regulatory, we see how we can assist. Hiring, we see how we can assist. You know, market entry, we see how we can assist. So it's really just leveraging our networks. I think that's the beauty of having a portfolio. We've also been able to connect some of our portfolio companies together where we see synergies. I think we definitely bring more than money. We help them commercially, but we also help them internally as well. So, you know, simple things like helping them install an accounting system, helping them manage their operations and their finance function better, helping them bring in a CFO. You know, these are some of the things that we do as well, because we're kind of preparing them for that next round of funding where we can bring in some of the private equity funds that we know, and we know what they're looking for. So we also help with that institutionalization process to make sure that we can help them scale effectively for the next round.
Okay, so I think I still have two questions before we go. First is around corporate governance in startups. A lot of startups these days, they have founders who don't have a lot of corporate experience. So they may not really understand how corporate governance should look like. So what should corporate governance look like for an early stage startup?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it depends what stage of the early stage you're talking about. I think at pre-seed and seed, you know, maybe you can get away with a board that is not so robust. But I think, as you're getting to our stage, where you're getting to Series A, you should definitely be thinking about having at least a 5-man board where, you know, investors are represented. Obviously, the founder and the management team is represented. But it's always good to have an independent as well that can just bring a different perspective with industry experience in that sector. So that's what we always try and push our founders to, is having an odd numbered board where there's at least independent represented, two from the investors, two from the management team, and we can have good discussion and debate at board meetings, rather than having a three-man board where it's one investor, two founders. I think that's very unbalanced. So as you think about having, you know, enhanced corporate governance, always think about having a balanced board, and one that represents the voice of the investor that's on board. Because as you scale up, that's the expectation. So you should always, I always say, start the way you want to go. So that's always my advice to founders, that, you know, even if you don't have a constitution board, at least have an advisory board at the pre-seed stage where you can show that there is some structure to your decision making early, because that gives investors comfort. So that's what I would say for that corporate governance.
All right, so final words, what are your final words or your tips for founders in Africa?
I would say don't give up. It's a very difficult terrain to do business. It's a very difficult terrain to build, to execute. So I think, you know, once you have your vision, you understand your purpose, you understand your why, don't give up, keep going. Everything that's meant to come to you will come to you. And I also say that make sure your why and your purpose impacts more than just you, because I think if it impacts just you in this environment, everyone would give up. But if you feel that, you know, what you're doing is bigger than just you, then in the difficult days, you keep going because you know that there are others that will be impacted. So try and have impact in what you're building. It helps add to the fire and it helps keep it burning. I always say that to founders that are building, because, you know, Nigeria is very tough. It's very, very tough, very, very frustrating sometimes. So try and have impact. Keep an open mind when talking to VCs. VCs are not the be-all and end-all, but they can definitely support you in your growth and in your execution plans. Try to not, don't believe the hype is what I would say. Pick your VCs carefully. Do your due diligence on your VCs as well. It's a two-way due diligence process. Don't just go for the one that gives you the highest valuation. So that would be my advice to founders.
All right. This has been very interesting. Thanks so much, Adesua.
No problem.
Thank you for joining me today on the podcast. But before we go, a few things. Please share and like this episode. You can also catch up with previous episodes at equitymerchants.show.